When you need guidance from someone you can truly trust, someone who aligns with your values of sovereignty and natural living, look no further than Dr. Jennifer Tice. Dr. Jen's expertise in homeopathy and naturopathic family care is unmatched. She is my personal go-to when I need an opinion on how to best support my family and myself when we are healing. And something I'm always telling everyone about, Dr. Jen runs a very specific food intolerance test. Having this information has quite literally changed my life once I decided to take it seriously. Knowing what our specific foods were to avoid has radically improved the health of myself and my children. So if you're looking to uplevel your health, head over to drjennifertice.com and you can find her on Instagram at Dr. Jennifer Tice.
Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldaya.
It's been a while, freedom child.
If you are like most of my listeners, you are devouring these episodes and you're probably wishing that you could speak to the women that come on this show, learn from them, even get to know them in real life, right? Well, I would like to invite you into my inner circle. It's called The Lighthouse. The Lighthouse is my highly exclusive online membership, and it's where most of the women on this podcast are hanging out. It's by far the best social media platform on the internet. It's highly curated by yours truly, and our team personally vets every single member coming in to ensure the highest caliber community imaginable. I'm talking a full feed of free birth announcements every day, engaging in intellectual conversation about everything taboo under the sun, a ton of group calls every month to connect and be in circle, not to mention the now 7-year-old matriarch search engine that will quickly replace your Google searching. We only open our doors 4 times a year, and half that time we only open it to those on the wait list. Add your name to the list in the show notes below and consider taking your place among us brilliant, sovereign, wild women, because it's just simply better when we're all together. See you on the inside, sis. All right. Welcome, Casia.
Hi, Emily. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear your story. Your photo that we shared is burned into my memory. It's a beautiful photo, but for some reason that photo became this whole back-end Instagram drama about me almost getting kicked off of Instagram. And it's weird because it's not even like a very graphic picture, but I don't know, it got caught up in some sort of getting censored, and every time I would appeal it and it would come back, it just kept me in this loop. And then anyway, it was this whole long thing. So I associate this beautiful photo now in my life as always like this one.
It is drama.
You're just holding the baby. Like, it's not even, you know, that crazy.
So many haters out there though. Maybe
well, and robots.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows? Gotta keep they're trying to keep the beauty off Instagram.
Well, the video's been taken down now because of that, I think, but it's on YouTube, so women can watch it on there.
Yeah, it's really annoying. Okay, but we are here to hear the epic tale of you free birthing your first child. So just take us to the beginning. When does this crazy idea come into your consciousness? What is this pregnancy like? And when do you hear about all of this? And yeah, just tell us your whole story.
So I'd say for most part of my early 20s, I was getting involved in a lot of conscious communities, and that's when I started to live with a bit more intention and really live on my own terms. And I think that was a changing point for me of breaking away from the pressures and expectations of what I should be doing with my life and more tuning into what feels right with me. So I'd always wanted to have a home birth, and my mum was the first woman I knew who had a home birth, and that was in the 90s. Yeah. Her first birth with me was in the hospital, but that birth made her adamant on a home birth with my younger sister. And she always used to say that she could have done it without the midwives, and they were actually doing her head in the whole time. So I had that imprint in my mind of home birth is the way. And then as I started to approach conscious conception, I found the podcast and started to speak to women who I personally know who have had a free birth, which is amazing, because not many women seem to know of someone in real life who has had, well, not in real life, but know of, like, a
really?
Or something. So I reached out to those women and would pick their brains on what it was like and why they decided it was for them, and that totally resonated with me.
So you just happen to have friends who have free birthed?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
One of them has done the Radical Birth Keeper course called Ruby.
Okay.
Nabila has free birthed three of her children.
Mm-hmm.
Chantelle, Ruby's sister. So in Manchester, there's quite a few women that we know.
Love that.
Icon.
Oh, that's so cool.
And they were so supportive. But apart from that, I was the first person in my immediate circle and friendship group to have a baby and to free birth.
So you knew your whole life home birth, but when does the concept of free birthing, like, how does that, is it through your friends, or how does that even as an option come into your awareness?
I think it was visualizing birth and what I would be doing and who I would be with. I thought, why would I have strangers there? Which midwives in the UK, if you decide to have a medicalized birth, you don't know which midwife you're going to get. So it is a stranger. Then I was thinking, I want to be comfortable. I've heard birth before being compared to having sex or going to the toilet and having a poo or things like that. And I wouldn't want to be observed by anyone I didn't know, or even a multiple people. The idea of that was really off-putting. So I was scaling it down.
Mm-hmm.
It was always going to be me, my partner, and the baby. Yeah, simple.
I mean, and I guess this is such an interesting conversation every time, because, you know, arguably everyone would feel that way if they thought about just that, right? Like, of course, no one's excited to have a stranger there. Of course, anyone would prefer comfort. And yet the vast majority of women choose to override those, let's call them preferences, because why? Because they're afraid, and because they believe, whether they're factually right or wrong, they believe that they and or their baby are truly safer in, well, an uncomfortable environment with strangers. So how does that like ideology not capture you? How does that, like, how do you contend with the average consciousness?
For me, I'd say choosing a wild pregnancy was really essential to getting to the point that I felt confident enough and ready to free birth, because I started the pregnancy with one foot in, one foot out, I'd say. We went to the first antenatal meeting to have a scan and ultrasound, and it was horrible. And you see the baby on the screen and you're
Hold
supposed to
on.
be. Oh.
When I lost you, it froze again. I didn't catch anything after you said that you went to the first antenatal appointment, and then say all that again, please.
So I went to the first antenatal appointment to one, I needed to make sure, I thought I needed to make sure that I was on the system in a way to help me with my maternity documents later on. And also, I think it was a bit of people pleasing, wanting to have the image of the ultrasound image to show people of the baby, those kind of things that I'd seen in movies, and I thought this is kind of the route that you take. But being in the sonographer's room was totally awful. I actually felt a little bit like a handmaid's tale, a handmaid out of Handmaid's Tale. The woman who was using the ultrasound equipment was speaking to her assistant or student and completely ignoring me, speaking in their medical language, not really involving me in the conversation. It was quite painful. They were making comments like, "Oh, the baby's a bit playing up and doesn't want to be seen." And my partner was saying, "Well, it is radiation. Maybe that's why." And he felt a bit helpless because I was clearly in a bit of discomfort. They tell you to drink lots of water before you go, and then they press really hard on your stomach. So that whole experience affirmed for me that I can't continue coming here because I don't have a voice here. I'm not seen here. It's not enjoyable. So from that point, I started to really research why women were also choosing wild pregnancy. It wasn't just a preference. It was to protect birth from the offset. Yeah.
So it sounds like your partner was pretty down from the beginning.
Oh yeah, he's amazing. We had a conversation in the car because we've been together for 11 years and we always need these check-ins to make sure that we're both on the same page. So I said to him, are you really okay with the way that I'm deciding to have this birth? And he said, yeah, absolutely. If you wanted to birth in the hospital, I wouldn't have wanted to have the child. So, because he's quite radical. Yeah, he's quite extreme.
Whoa.
So I thought, yes, Remy. Okay, he's on board. I don't need anyone else. For me, having his support was more than enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's a funny response. Okay, so you leave that ultrasound being like, nah, this isn't for me. This doesn't feel right. And from that point on, you choose to have a wild pregnancy and align with free birth.
Yeah, so from that point, I got all my books together, which was amazing. This was the most incredible time of my life because birth education for women in the UK is just not a thing. It isn't. When we're in primary school, high school, we're always told to avoid a pregnancy, more or less, through the fear of it. So being able to educate myself and find out how incredible pregnancy is and how intelligent birth is, and that I'm able to have this experience. I was just sat there every night reading as many books as I could, listening to the Free Birth Society podcast and meditating with I liked Yolanda's birth meditation playlist, and I also used all of my birthday money. This was in the October to pay for the Free Birth Society free birth course.
Wait, you get birthday money?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm so jealous. Who gives you birthday money as an adult?
Well, they would all what would people usually buy? I just said, go just get me money this year.
Awesome.
I'll put it towards the course.
I love it. Oh, so you like told whoever, your parents or something, that that was what.
Yeah, it was my mom. She was the one that gave me the money for it.
Aw, I just was picturing like a birthday card with the $5 in it, like from grandma or whatever.
Oh yeah, I
But
still get that. Yeah. Oh,
love that.
I'm very grateful now.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sweet. Okay, so your mom, let's talk about her for a minute. So she obviously plays a part in this. Yeah, so what's that like? What's her level of support, or what she has to work through?
Yeah, so my mum, like I said, she had a home birth, which was pretty radical for her peer group at the time. And she's brought us up to be quite holistic anyway. So if you are unwell, it's not straight to the doctors. It's more, let's, sit with it a minute. What's the symptoms, herbs, alternative medicines? So that's how she raised us, and that's her view on wellness. So when it came to discussing my birth plans, she was pretty much on board, though that did change slightly throughout the pregnancy. So as you get closer towards giving birth, that's when everyone's fears start to come up, not just your own. But yeah, I can speak about that later on. But throughout the pregnancy, she was really supportive and didn't have any, yeah, she was quite interested in it, but she always said, I don't want to be at the birth. And that was hard to accept at some point, but I worked through that on my own, and it turned out for the best that she wasn't there.
Exactly. And there is a level of maturity and respect, I think, for her to be willing to opt out and know that she's not the right fit, right? Versus I hear about all these stories of the mom coming and ruining the birth. Ugh. So what else do you want to share about your pregnancy? How did you navigate the fear, the social aspect of it? What was all that like?
I'd say while pregnancy can be a little bit lonely at times because you're not part of the herd who have common stories to share about this happened at my midwife appointment and this is what my baby scan looks like. And
You're like, I just went for a walk today.
yeah,
I don't really have anything.
it's all very boring in a way. And I
Yeah,
think
for sure.
part of women, a lot of women maybe like the idea of having some drama around it and going to an appointment and hearing that, oh, my baby's measuring too big and now I've got to take this or do this or I can't have my home birth. And I was never into that. I wanted to speak about the magic that was to come. Like, I'm having a child, my life is going to change. What's my relationship going to look like with my partner? I wanted to talk about the birth. And there wasn't many women that, well, there was a lot of women I could do that with. It was more my friends who had ha not had a baby yet, but were all on the same mindset as me. And that gave me a lot of comfort. And I also had a doula. So in Manchester, in the UK, we have a funded free doula service for Black and South Asian women because of the statistics of medicalized birth are so shocking. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it's like one in four women, Black or South Asian women, may die in childbirth in the hospital. And that is a really terrible figure considering that that group of women make up about 5% of the population.
Wait,
So
one in four are dying?
I think, yeah, that was the statistic at one point, which is why there's funding.
And so they throw them a free doula? Like that's the thing that's going to save their lives while they head into a hospital that's killing them? What?
Yeah, the I think,
What is the doula going to do? What?
yeah, it puts the blame on someone else because at the
Oh
moment
my
I don't
God.
witch hunt for doulas at the moment in the UK, so I think that's probably why. But the funded service that I had with my doula, I was really grateful for because I knew of my doula Naomi before becoming pregnant, and she's very much on the same page as me. So it was nice to meet with her monthly and speak about those things I wanted to speak about, like I'm having a baby, what's life going to look like now?
So you were given a free doula even though you were birthing in the system.
Oh, sorry, I didn't explain that well. The funded doula service is not available through the NHS. It's the funded doula service is a separate organisation, but they can gain funding because of the statistics, if that makes sense. So their bid was approved because it supports
No, totally. I just mean, but like you got to use that service even though you weren't birthing in the hospital where the murder is happening.
Oh, yeah.
And did you have her at your birth?
No.
Why not?
I didn't. It's so. I feel terrible saying this. I didn't trust anyone apart from my partner. And I think having someone there, I know myself, I would have been trying to outsource the
Course.
strength that I needed. I know that because even with my partner, there was times when I just wanted him to hold me and
Yeah.
just take off some of this intensity. Please let's share it. And it's not possible. It's just not
If
possible.
only. Yeah.
So I thought I had, yeah, I knew that was coming and I thought, nah.
So when you brought her into your pregnancy, were you transparent with her? Like, what was the setup of you were like, I want a friend that's a doula, but you're not coming to my birth? Like,
Oh
how? Yeah.
Now I knew that we wanted a free birth, and she was so happy to support a pregnancy and a birth where the mum was taking total agency over her own journey. She was so impressed and happy that I was reading the books and doing the work, and I just wanted to have someone, like I said, to talk about things with because it does get really lonely. Apart from Nye, I had my friends and like a few WhatsApp groups where I knew of these women in other parts of the UK that had had free birth
Yeah.
while pregnancy. So yeah, she was really on board with that. And she didn't take offense from it. And I think the fact that it is a free service worked in my favor because if you pay for something, you, well, I feel like, oh, I need to make my worth, like use it and get my worth out of it. But I think because it was free, I was a bit like, I can take that, leave that, you know.
And you probably wouldn't have paid.
No.
Like it was the perfect scenario for you and exactly what you were
Yeah.
looking for.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned earlier that heading towards the end of your pregnancy is when everyone's fears come out, and there was something about your mom. You want to take us into the end of your pregnancy?
Yeah, so towards the end of the pregnancy, let's cast my mind back. I was getting really big and very uncomfortable and having lots of contractions, as in every day having contractions, but I liked them. They were at the front of my belly and I was kind of observing them like an out-of-body experience, and they wasn't painful. And I was just thinking, labor could come any time now, but I'm not putting any pressure on it as a first time mum. But the week that the labor portal opened, everyone around me seemed to notice that, and out of the blue, I was having these really difficult conversations. And it wasn't just with my mum, there was another family member who had called us and said, even though she knew all about our plans to free birth and was on board with it, she called and basically just dumped all of the fear onto us and said,
Whoa.
I was naive and I need an independent midwife, and my partner won't know what to do. He'll be flapping, and someone she knows, her baby died at home with a home birth. Everything you can imagine that you're not supposed to,
Wow.
she said it. I had a conversation with my mum where she was getting really worried and concerned.
Was this on the phone,
This was
this
on the phone.
person?
Yeah.
And she was just dumping on you, and what are you doing?
I'm really sensitive at this point, so I froze and didn't have much to say.
Ugh.
The aftermath of it was taking it out on my partner a little bit because it caused an argument between us, which is what happens because the pressure is so intense then. I ended up having an emergency call with Ruby, who I mentioned before. We jumped on a call and we went through all of the birth emergencies just to put my mind at ease, and then I felt more in my center again, and I got a little bit in my ego too. I thought, you know what, I'm going to prove you all wrong here because this is so possible and you're simply projecting fears and it comes from a place of love, but the timing of it is just totally wrong.
So then your mom, she also is jumping on board in some way there, it sounds like.
She had a lot of fears come up that week. And
was it fueled by this other person?
No, it wasn't fueled by some of it. My mum even said at one point, you know, which was shocked to hear, she said, how will you know how to push?
Huh?
Or what to push? And I thought, well, mum, you've done this before. And she said, I know, but I think with parents, now I am a parent, I think you do have fear for them in a way that you don't for yourself, because she said if she was about to have this birth, she would choose free birth for herself. But seeing me, it set off a different level of fear in her.
And she also didn't free birth, you know, like she is still coming from a place where she did have a medical provider at her birth. And it's very, very likely that this medical provider told her when to push. It doesn't, just because she had a home birth doesn't mean shit about that, you know? So yeah, it is a trip, man. It's all really, really wild.
Oh, I'm telling you. Yeah.
So how'd you guys work that through? And like, what was the vibe as you entered birth with her?
When I went into labor, so these conversations were happening on Wednesday, Thursday. I went into labor on Friday.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I didn't make contact with any family members to let them know. That was how I managed that. By the time the conversation came with my mum, I was very much in my center and there was a bit of pushback there. But yeah, by the time it came to actual labor, oh, but then again, saying that, when I was in labor, because it was a bit of a, well, long labor, I guess. On the Saturday, she called me and said, I was thinking about you and how are you getting on? And I was really in it. So I thought, oh, I don't really want to tell my mum that I'm in labor, but I couldn't help it and said, I'm in labor. And she went, I knew it. I had a dream last night. And the baby's coming on Sunday, just like when you were born on a Sunday, and it's a boy. So we had this really beautiful conversation. She was obviously, she were very connected. She telepathically knew that I was in labor without me even telling her. But she left me to it, and I'm grateful for that.
Anything else you want to say before you head into your birth story?
Just that I had a really beautiful, blissful pregnancy once I stepped away from the system. And I think if women do want to have a free birth, that is the first part of protecting that space. Yeah. That's all I'll tell you about the pregnancy. Yeah.
The women who are up for the work of wild pregnancy and the detangling and deprogramming and like obviously you lay down the foundation of your birth in how you choose to have a pregnancy. It's just a lot less likely if you stay in the system in your pregnancy that you're going to have your wits about you enough to also opt out at the very end. I mean, it does happen. It definitely happens, but
yeah, it does happen. I think the premise of wild pregnancy that I like the most, though, is it really forces you to sit with all of the uncomfortable feelings.
Yeah.
I did have a beautiful, blissful pregnancy, but there wasn't times when, like, I went to teach on a yoga retreat in Gambia in Africa, and we went to eat, and I had this food on the beach, and it was really bad. It gave me bad belly.
Oh, no.
But you know when you've got food poisoning, the cramping in your stomach?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on the toilet in Gambia thinking catastrophic thoughts. There's no ambulance service out here. There's my partner's not here. And I was just worried about the baby. And on the way home, which was a 2-hour journey back to the villa, I was constantly like trying to check whether I was bleeding. And my friend just put a hand on me and was like, it's okay. Baby's fine. So there was loads of moments like that where I just had to sit with, okay, what if at this point the baby decides not to stay, or, you know, it
Yeah.
wasn't easy, but again, it just prepares you for how uncomfortable labor is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all for the wild pregnancy.
Totally. And you have to go through those, you know, and then the next pregnancy, you get diarrhea again and you're like, it won't even occur to you that the, you know what I mean? Like you keep moving the needle of going through these things. Yeah. Of like, oh my gosh, am I okay? Is baby okay? How do I know? I don't know. And then it just kind of becomes more and more integrated and just less scary, I think.
Yeah. Actually, the night of labor, we went out to eat at a local Caribbean restaurant and I had fish. So when we got home and later on in the night, I woke up to these pains again and I thought, oh, food poisoning from that fish. I'll never do this again. But it was actually contractions.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Food poisoning twice in one pregnancy is not fair.
Yeah. But that was the start of labor. So Friday night, I was having these contractions that were more intense than the ones I'd been having for a week prior. I didn't wake up my partner. I just got into the shower and I was bent forward and let the shower go on my lower back and felt this really nice relief. Really excited, actually, thinking, yes, this is happening. I'm ready to meet my baby. But I had a singing circle booked in with the girls. So throughout my pregnancy, one of my friends, she's an artist, and I asked her whether she would do weekly song circles at my house, because I knew that singing would really help with, you know, relaxing my pelvic floor, being all connected and such. So we had these weekly circles, and that was due to start at 10 a.m. and I'm in the shower from like 3 till 4, and then 6 a.m. I'm on the toilet, or everything's opening out, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to have the girls round? But I think, you know what, let me just enjoy my plans. I won't cancel on them. It came to 10 a.m. and the girls are starting to come in. I went to the toilet. My mucus plug had come away. And I thought, oh, here's another sign. I did plan to not let the girls know that I was in labor, because I didn't want everyone to be like, how are you getting on? Are you okay? Fussing me. But you can't help it. It was just such a joyous moment. I shared it with everyone who came in that day. And we were singing for about 3 hours of beautiful songs of joy and peace and love.
Cute.
It was beautiful. And my contractions were still coming early into the singing, and I'd sit down and I'd breathe through them, and I thought, oh, imagine if the baby comes with all my girls, how amazing would that be? But by the time that they'd left, the contraction has pretty much slowed down and almost stopped. I think I was that relaxed, I don't know. So as they all headed home, one of my friends at the time said, let's not contact Casey now, let's just leave her to it. I thought that was nice. It was just left me and my partner for the rest of the day. And I thought, oh, are the contractions going to come back? You know, that I thought the baby was coming tonight. This is Saturday. But no, I tried to get some rest that evening. Too uncomfortable, not sleeping much. And then things started ramping up again. 3 a.m. in the morning. So I thought, right, no singing circle today. Let's do it. And I'm in the shower, opening up the bowels. But what's happening at this point is I'm getting these...
Wait, does that mean you're pooping in the shower?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I said that on the podcast. But you're so relaxed.
We've all been there. No judgment. Okay.
Well, it's just not how
I won't make that the name of your episode.
Yeah, it was a very humbling moment, but it was also a really like serious moment in the shower, more serious than the day before, because the day before was really giddy. And this day I was quite like, oh, okay, I want to connect with all the mums around the world who are in labor right now, all the animals. I was it's just feeling very wild and primal. I think it's from pooing in the shower, you know, all of your sensibilities are just gone, aren't they?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was Saturday, Sunday morning. And then things were just very constant, but it's tiring having the contractions and breathing through each one. It takes a lot
Yeah.
of energy, and I was constantly hungry, so I was feeding myself, but then going to the toilet and the pressure that was putting on my bum, and was getting hemorrhoids towards the end of the pregnancy because I was so, I was in a lot of pain going back and forth to the kitchen to the toilet. So my partner, he said, right, let's get into the garden. I'll put a fire on and you can just relax. And it was a beautiful day. In Manchester, we don't have many days with blue sky and sun out, especially if, because it was around March time. So I was sat in the garden with the fire on, feeling the sun on my face, really relaxed, and the contractions started to slow down. I thought, oh, I could be in for another few days of this now. How am I going to do this? So I ended up joining a couple of forums online, free birth forums on Facebook. This is not how I imagined being in labor, you know, on the screen, crazy screen time in the
Yeah.
just thinking, trying to find out like how long does slow labor last? But obviously
If
there's
there's one
no
answer.
answer.
Oh dear.
I knew all this from doing the course, from listening to the podcast, but all everything just, yeah.
Well, just we're so desperate at that stage. Like we're so desperate to try to find any sense of what to expect and to hang on to control, and it's such a frivolous, fruitless. What's the right term? Yeah, it can't be done, but I totally understand.
Yeah, the hardest part of labor is the mental game, easily. And I even sat there and thought, now I know why women go for elective C-sections, and now I know why they obsess about the due date, because it's this illusion of having some form of control over when the baby's gonna arrive. So it gets to about 6 o'clock and I'm done, you know, the sunset. I'm having these call I had this call with my mum, and you remember she said that the baby was arriving on Sunday, and I'm thinking, oh, what if mum was wrong? It's nearly the end of Sunday. A few other people had started to pop up by then. Even though you tell people not to check in, they're gonna
They
check in
came
now.
over?
No, not to the house. They were calling and
Oh,
texting, are
okay.
you getting on, girl? Any sign of the baby, that sort of thing. But that additional pressure, it's irritating, isn't it? And it's not what you need. So we switch off the phones, no more Facebook forums. And I said to Remy, let's go upstairs. Let's just go to bed. And yeah, we go upstairs and I'm sat on the bed and I have a little moment where I'm talking to the baby and saying, you know, it's really safe to come now. I've been telling you this whole pregnancy, just stay in the womb, stay with me here. But now it's safe to come. And I'm speaking to God and I'm saying, just I'm ready. And I have a cry, and that helps. That was a real big sob. And after that, things started to relax a little bit in my body, not feeling so much like weight and pressure. What did we do then? Oh yeah. My boyfriend said, let's put on a comedy to take your mind off it. So he puts on 40-Year-Old Virgin, which I'd never seen before. It's really funny. Yeah. So we were sat and I was sat on the bouncy ball in the bedroom watching the film. And that laughter, I think, was really good for bringing the labor on, because by halfway through that film, things had started to ramp up a bit. I thought, oh, this is it, you know. I said to Remy, I think you should start getting things ready. Get the blankets, because we've got wooden floor, so we needed a bit of support for my knees on the floor. So get the blankets. Can you change the lighting? Set up the tripod, because I really wanted to capture the birth. So he's busying himself getting all those things done, and I'm just using all of my internal like yoga cues to relax into the contractions, which is really difficult. It's difficult in that they are all consuming. You can feel a contraction everywhere in the tips of your toes. You can feel it in your eyelids. It's everywhere. So I'm just moving around. And I thought at this point from reading so many books that I'd come out of my thinking brain. I'd just be more in the body, but I had so many thoughts all the time just coming in about what I should be doing and what positions I should be in. So I was hoping that I could reach this point of like just more of the embodied experience that's not so heavy in my mind. So yeah, he had some like folktronic medicine jungle music on. That was part of my birth playlist. And then that started to get too much. And I thought, now we're heading towards a serious part of birth, because birth is already dramatic enough. You don't need all the drums and stuff to make it this big performance. So we turned the music off and I'm on over the bed, knees on the ground, hands on top of the bed. And I'm just swaying, just feeling really uncomfortable, as if my back's about to open up. And Remy said, my partner said, I was making quite high noises. And he'd, from doing a lot of the courses and reading books, he remembered that it's best if you make these low guttural sounds. So apparently he was behind me, I didn't see this on the video, trying to make moo noises behind my ear. And I thought, I didn't hear any of this now, so this is when I'm just totally in my zone. But yeah, he at one point he said, breathe, because I was not forgetting to, but it's very hard, I found, to take a deep breath in. It's easier to focus on the breath out and let the breath in take care of itself. So I'm focusing on that. And I'm really speaking to the baby at this point and saying, like, you've got this, like, we're ready, you know what to do. I close my eyes. And this must be the point of transition, because it felt as if my body was no longer my own. And this huge surge of energy just started to come down straight from the crown of my head, through my spine, all the way to the base. And it was like I was literally at the edges of the earth. Bringing in the baby, bringing in that bit, my baby spirit. So once that experience had ended, the head came out, and I was just totally, I was just overjoyed that I didn't feel any pain. It was more like, wow, the baby is here. I can feel the baby's head, and we're doing this. And I was saying, I'm so proud of you, to myself, to the baby. And Remy said, after the birth, he said, when I saw the head, the baby looked so perfect and peaceful. It had this split thought, like, what if the baby's going to be stillborn? That's the thought he had. But he put it to, he said, in the moment, he just put it to the side. And he's really good at that. He's very good at not letting his emotions spill over. He holds space really well. So, yeah, the baby's head's out now, and I think it's nearly 3 minutes, maybe longer. But I knew that you can wait for the next contraction, and there's no rush whatsoever, and there's no harm in the baby's head being out whilst they're connected to the placenta. So I'm enjoying the rest and just thinking, wow, this is it. I'm here. I'm also having thoughts like, I've really done this, even though there's so much more to come because the placenta's not out yet. But yeah, the next contraction, the baby doesn't move. And then, well, maybe he did some spinning in there. And then the contraction after that, body came out. Remy caught him in his hands, which is obviously the best moment of his life. And I'm so glad that he got to experience that. And I said, oh, well, can you pass him underneath? And I'm in a bit of shock at this point.
Yeah.
I can feel like my body's shaking, and I know that the baby's there, but I'm just like looking into my baby's face to really ground myself in the moment. And I'm speaking to my baby, and I didn't know he was a boy at that point, and I just looked down to check, and it was a boy. And then we both start crying, and I could go again. It was just so amazing. It was out of this world. You can't describe. No one gets it until you've done it yourself. So yeah, I was holding him, and I said to Remy, "Can we call the mums now?" That was the plan. I should have waited. In hindsight, should I have waited until after the placenta was here? Who knows? Call the mums. My mum lives around the corner. She arrives in less than 10 minutes. Remy's mum lives pretty close as well, so she arrives not
sure. Oh, whoa. They both come before your placenta's born.
Before the placenta's born. Okay. I know. I think because I looked down and it was more blood than I expected. I think when you're new to birth, there is a lot of fluids, and until you see it yourself, you don't realize. So I was looking down, I thought, oh, is that a lot of blood? But I felt fine. I was engaging with the baby, and I was really hungry, and I just said, well, let me just get onto the bed and rest here a minute. So my mum and Remy's mum come in, and they're overjoyed. So we have this moment while we're all on the bed and just in absolute awe of my son. Then before you know it, an hour and 10 minutes has passed. Now, most people don't know that you can wait for the placenta way longer than the doctors ever allow you to birth the placenta. And I had explained this to Remy's mom and my mum before. But in that moment, that is when their fears start to set in, and they're like, why is the placenta not here yet? You know, shouldn't you be birthing the placenta? So that was a bit annoying, because I'd let them into my space, and now I'm on someone else's timer. I know. So we're going back and forth with me being out of it. Remember, I've just had a baby, so I'm still in like that stage of adrenaline and shock. And I'm saying, it's fine, you know, just it will come in its own time. It got to a point where I said, right, everyone out, meaning the mums, not Remy. So they went downstairs, but the house is, you know, it's 12 o'clock at night, so it's really quiet. You can hear everything, and I can hear them on Google looking at retained placenta and twittering on. Even though I knew it was so completely normal and everything was fine, when you're in that vulnerable state and you hear people you look up to, maternal figures, being concerned, it does affect you on a physical level, mental level. So I was saying to Remy, right, we just need to get back into the birth space. You know, let's just start again, kind of thing. And we're doing that, and then all of a sudden my mum just bursts into the door, and she says in a very authoritative mum voice, right, you just need to push that placenta out now. So funnily enough, yeah, and I give thanks for this, because I would have hated it to go another way, I have this contraction, I bear down, and pop out comes the placenta. So I went back and forth for a while after my birth when I was processing how it all went with, should my mum have been there? But then I had my mum there, and maybe I needed to hear, you know, mum's voice in that moment saying, you just get that placenta out now. And it came out. And then after that, everyone was chill. It was a joyous moment. We sat on the bed until 4 a.m. in the morning, bloodied sheets had been cleared away, soup had been prepared, and I was just retelling the story. Like, mm-hmm. I did read once that when someone has been through a traumatic moment, that it is best to just tell the story straight away. And birth isn't trauma in that way, but as soon as you retell the story, it helps you to really process it, I think.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, that's what happened.
And so how does those first couple days go and nursing and yeah, how old is baby now?
8 months.
Okay, so how's it been?
Incredible, really smooth. Before having the baby, I thought I wouldn't want lots of visitors round, but I was on such a high. The visitors were coming thick and fast to the point where my mum had to put a visitor's bench in the bedroom. It was like one in, one out. And I loved it. I did, because I got to tell my story and people were coming around with food. We had a lotus birth, which helped deter people from holding the baby, which is a good trick for anyone who is thinking of having like lots of visitors in. My sister, who lives in London, she came up for a month and was looking after me and was
Oh, that's sweet.
combing my hair and creaming my face. And my mum was amazing, Remy's mum. Everyone was great. In that process, I was a bit shocked with the early breastfeeding stages. Again, it's similar to the peak of labor, where you're like looking for someone to take a little bit of this strain and help you. But when you decide to exclusively breastfeed, it's all on you, and accepting that makes it a lot easier. So the sooner I started to accept that, I got over the fact of how constant mothering is, and I am the main caregiver, and that's okay. And ever since then, I've loved having my son here. I love having a family. That's really changed the way I view the world. Nothing else seems to matter now. And yeah, I just look forward to having more children as well. I'd go again now if it happens.
So how would you say that free birthing has changed you?
It's given me, I already had this, but it's given me this deep sense of trust in myself. It has made me even more suspicious of systems that healthcare, government, all of the big ones. It has formed such a deep bond with my partner that we often just get glances at each other, and I'm like, that is my person. Like, he just gets me. He gets it. Like, we're on the same frequency. We've spoken so much about what frequency is, and yeah, we're vibing at this level, but until you've been that path together, it's like, yeah, we're from the same place.
Well,
So
and the intimacy and opportunity that he got to witness you birth in power, you know, most men's initiation into fatherhood is watching their wife be sexually assaulted. You know, it's so the opposite. It is so brutal. And the animal, you know, body in the male is like watching his woman be acted upon, you know, be violated, and he's not protecting her. He can't, right? Because they've chosen to put their trust in a bunch of strangers in a system, right? To be, you know, whatever the right term is, to be a part of the herd. And so there's such a spiritual cost to a couple. When the story for the vast majority, you know, out there, the story is he held her leg back while she was cut, you know, while she was drugged and numb, and he's a part of it, or he cut the cord because the doctor told him to when she never wanted that. I mean, it's so dark, and it is to ruin a family. You know, and so then we have this free birth family emerge. I mean, they've always been around, but currently, right, we're in these big discussions and this big discovery of one of the most incredible things that happens in a family, in a free birth situation, is what you're describing, this shared frequency, this sense of like, you know me in a whole new way. You've watched me like fucking struggle and want to quit and like all this stuff, and then you rose to power and he saw that and he holds that in your family. Like, that is what the father should be doing, that is what the husband should be initiated through. And it just is so, it's just so evil and painful that that is not the situation out there for most men, and that their initiation, not just into, I mean, their initiation into fatherhood, you know, is to be cut out. They're not important in the hospital at all. They have no place. It's so, so, so fucked up. And that's the beginning. I mean, so much of my coaching practice is full of women who were abused in the system. And obviously I'll at some point be like, tell me about your marriage. Like, how has this impacted your marriage? And she's like so full of resentment and hurt and feeling so abandoned that this abuse happened right in front of this guy, you know, who married her and promised to protect her. Anyway, it's so meaningful to me. And it's so important to talk about that aspect of your relationship, because that is, it's like untouchable, you know, that when you guys go through hard times in your life together, that you have this as one of many. It's not your only piece of foundation. Obviously, you've had 11 years together, but this is such an anchor of intimacy and trust and connectedness that will serve you guys so much in your life together. You know, I mean, I know you know this, but it's so big.
Oh, I know. And I think the way that we welcomed our son into the world has impacted the way that Remy is now a father, in that he's so confident. I hear of some dads who, you know, the baby's crying and they'll stand outside the shower waiting for the mum to have the shower. he is like...
I mean, I know free birth dads that do that too.
Maybe it's a dad
but yes,
thing.
But yes, of course.
He's on job. He has supported me so much. Meals, massage, you know, just knowing that when I need a moment and I need to tap out. And I think it's because he's felt so part of the experience.
Yeah.
It's not, he wasn't pushed out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is what you said. I agree. It's evil what the hospitals are doing to the most sacred ceremony of our lives, which is birth.
It's very intentional and it's very successful. You know, a fractured family will be codependent on the system, on pharmaceuticals, on therapists, you know, the whole thing. You know, and then what do we see with free birthing families is like fathers stop working out of the home a lot, or they start, you know, women stop working out of the home. You know, all of a sudden there's this deeper bond and togetherness that they're, you know, families aren't up for the same bullshit. Like you said about being suspicious of the systems, it's like damn straight, you know. Yeah. And free birthing families don't then just like surrender their babies to the public school system and to pediatricians and to, it's whack. Like, we're not doing that. Like, we don't birth in power to then pass them off, you know. It's a full claiming of our little pack, you know. Yeah. And it's just the beginning.
It's super radical. And I was surprised, because you meet so many people. I'm a yoga teacher and I meet a lot of yoga teachers and people in the wellness industry, and I thought they would be on the same vibe. Yeah. Understand this whole connection of why it's important to free birth and why women need that total agency. But then when it comes to it, that it's like, yeah, we're just going to go to the hospital. Or with, you know, it reminded me of when it was COVID, and that just exposed all of the people who said that they were into wellness or really conscious, but then suddenly we need to rely on Big Pharma for this injection. So it's like,
well, it's like, it's like everyone is moving the needle. Well, not everyone. Some people who identify as conscious, you know, anyone who's trying, let's put it that way, because there's plenty of people who are asleep and totally committed to staying asleep, and they are not moving the needle, right? So I'm not talking about those people, the like zombie people out there. But then there's, let's say, everyone else who on some level thinks they're conscious, they are trying, they're trying to do better than their parents did, they're trying to be healthier, whatever. But ultimately, everyone's moving the needle at the pace that they can handle, right? At the pace that they're up for. And so someone like you is up for moving it a lot. You also had a good baseline story around the home birth and your mother. And, you know, of course, there's like more to your life story than just that. But that is a beautiful imprint, right, to get to shape your story, you know, that you're creating now. But anyway, we're all moving the needle at the pace that we are up for. And some people do it really fast and some people do it really slow. It's not really on, I guess what I'm saying isn't, it's not going to come out as articulate as I would like, but if total embodied sovereignty is the arrival point, I don't think most people will ever get there. And that's okay. I don't know that this is our only go round of our consciousness getting to play in a physical realm. I mean, who knows what's going on out there, but everyone is at it at their own pace. And it is frustrating. There is a lot of, I would say, hypocrisy in it. You know, I used to be, you know, in the LA like yoga world, and everyone's like, you know, chanting and doing their daily meditations and, you know, eating in the way that they think is conscious. And then they just go in for their inductions. And it's like, what kind of spiritual bypass is happening for you? And also, it's okay. Like, it ain't what I'm up to. It's not what I'm interested in. There's a lot of ego wrapped up in it. There's a lot of identity, you know, but ultimately people are doing what they're up for. And most people aren't up for a truly sovereign embodied life. They're just not. It would require too much maturity, too much skillfulness, too much responsibility. And all we can do is live by example, right? All we can do is focus on ourselves, walk the walk as we think it should be walked. And it will cause a ripple effect, you know, but I try to remember that it's not, it's part of why I do coaching, is just like, it's not better or worse. It's not on a scale like that. It's really highly individual for one person's particular consciousness imprint of what they can handle, you know?
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. Just frustrating, because when you experience it, you're like, no, you deserve this.
Of course.
This, and I want to shout it from the rooftops, and I want.
But it requires someone, they would literally have to be willing to fully face themselves, which is a big ask. Most people are not up for that. That requires a level of resourcedness that, you know, I think the vast majority of people out there are at a much level, lower level consciousness, where they're still trying to, like, they don't even know who they are yet. They're still trying to figure out, like, having some baseline security within their own system, much less, you know. And what's obviously cool, and that you and I both know this about free birth, is it's the opportunity to fast track your self-love and intuition and connection to self is available within our blood mysteries. It's not just birth, you know, really all of our blood mysteries. It's all available in our coding. Should we choose to use it as a consciousness raise, it's right there, you know? And yeah, it's totally heartbreaking. And that's why we have to talk about this stuff.
Yeah. That's why I'm so grateful for the podcast as well. So yeah, thank you. Thank you for all of those days during pregnancy where I would listen to women speak on this channel and be joyful for them and celebrate them. And the Free Birth Society course really helps too. Just the way that, you know, it's so comprehensive, I think, and it covers all bases. And now that they've got such like a big community of radical birth keepers, I just love, I absolutely love and honor the work that you're doing, and I think it's just so incredibly beautiful and powerful and impactful. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's really rocking. It is really like, women are just like, yeah, let's go, you know? It's so cool. It's so so freaking cool. And it's the most fun that it's literally just like pretty much my you know, my core message is just like, wake up to yourself. Like, you have everything you could possibly need. And here's a bunch of women talking about how they woke up to that. It's just such, it's such cool medicine that it's about waking up, you know, to yourself. And gosh, what a, yeah, it's so amazing. I love all these stories and how different all the women are. And yet also, we're all just like totally the same, you know, of our motherhood, you know, trajectory, and just trying to like do right by our kids and do better from where we came. And yeah, it's so amazing. And there are all these little communities popping up. I mean, that's the most exciting thing, because that's what makes this all sustainable, you know. And I'm so proud of you. I mean, you set a really high thermostat setting for your family, you know, and that your son and any future children just get to know this as normal is a really big deal. It's a really big deal. And I don't know what will happen in our kids' lifetime, you know, of what we're doing. I don't know how far collectively the needle will move or not. But you know, I always just return to like my family. Like, what am I doing in my family? And how am I increasing the health of my marriage, increasing the health and consciousness of my household? And that will radiate out, you know. And my primary focus is on the thermostat setting for my household. And that is, I think, the most revolutionary thing we can do, you know, is like focus on your family, focus there first and foremost. It doesn't matter beyond
what's going
that.
On outside.
Yeah. Well, so many people are like focused on these, you know, big planetary issues of nonprofits and humanitarian stuff, but their marriage is shit. Or they're disconnected from their kids. And it's like, okay, it's just far more effective if we start tree trunk out. And again, that requires enormous intention and maturity and consciousness and skillfulness. And I mean, it's all inside out work.
But yeah, it's all, like you said, we all have the tools available for it. I do believe that.
All right. Well, I'm so proud of you. Congratulations.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive private vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention. death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back.